Oh, you are, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for being on time. I appreciate it. Morning. We'd like to call over the House Committee on Transportation, April 19th. We have three bills on our agenda this morning, and at this point, unless somebody has a pressing need, we'll follow our agenda. Janet, is there anything we need to bring up before we get to the agenda? I do have one thing. We're going to try to get a list of the bills that are still alive and well and committed to all the members so they can take a look at them. And we're trying to get a schedule out so you can get a feeling. A bill that isn't heard by Friday is, of course, not going to be ever heard. So we'll play it good accordingly. Is there anything else you can think of, Janet?
No, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And we'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2764. And would you bring us up to speed on that one, Janet, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 2764 would authorize the Department of Transportation and the railroad company or public authority to agree to lump sum reimbursements from the grade crossing protection account during or at the completion of improvement projects at railroad crossings. And here there are representatives from the railroads and from the Department of Transportation here. I'm going to pass out a section of statute about the apportioning of costs of rail crossing improvements that kind of a background for the provision that's in the bill. Thank you.
Okay, this was brought to us at the request of the Department of Transportation. Would they like to speak first? We have two people on our list here. Maybe together. We have Everett Cutter here and Claudia Howell. So however you'd like to come up together, it'd be wonderful. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Everett Cutter, manager of the Oregon Railroad Association, and with me is Claudia Howell, who manages the rail division of the Oregon Department of Transportation. And we are here to speak to you about House Bill 2764, introduced at the request of the Oregon Railroad Association. What this bill does is allow another method of reimbursement if the parties agree from the state's grade crossing protection for costs incurred in installing or upgrading signals at highway railroad crossings. The grade crossing protection account, which is administered by Oregon Department of Transportation, helps to pay for, as I say, installation, upgrading of automatic safety devices at public grade crossings. Signal projects are determined by the Department of Transportation in conjunction with public authorities and railroads and based largely upon an accident prediction formula that tends to prioritize which crossings are signalized. Actual installation or upgrading of the devices is performed by the affected railroad in cooperation with ODOT and local public road authorities. Under the present state law, a railroad or public authority who may receive reimbursement from the account for signal projects submits progress claims. According to present statute, may submit progress claims for up to 80% of labor and material costs while a project is underway, and then settle up on the remaining the remainder sum at the end, at the completion of a project. This actual cost billing process involves a very tedious, labor-intensive, paper-intensive process capturing all indirect costs of the project for submission to the state. House Bill 2764 provisions would allow, but not mandate, a simpler alternative method for reimbursement. Under the lump sum alternative, upon agreement by ODOT, the railroad or public authority would submit an upfront estimate of a project's expected cost. A bill then could be submitted during work on a project to cover estimated materials costs, and then upon completion of the project, a second one-page summary bill would be issued for the remainder of the initial estimated amount. So this streamlined lump sum method has proved in other states to be easier to process and should result in administrative savings both to the railroad and to the state agency. This proposal envisions the use of the lump sum reimbursement method for relatively common or routine kinds of projects and not for the more complicated ones where you may have cantilevered signals or more than one railroad track at a crossing. But generally your cookie cutter projects that are done all the time. Railroads are confident that for these relatively straightforward projects, they can provide ODOT with an estimate that will satisfactorily approximate final actual costs. And then, finally, to ensure that the lump sum alternative is working as intended and that estimates are on target, there would be a periodic review between ODOT and railroads to keep projects subject to the method in order to share information, keep the process current, and make sure everything is working as intended. So to summarize, it's important to note some of the items that were agreed to in drafting the bill. The proposed statutory change would permit but not mandate the ability for ODOT to use the lump sum procedure if they so desire. The estimate of total cost of the project is required as the basis of the amount covered by the lump sum reimbursement method. So we do have the estimate as and use of the lump sum alternative requires ODOT agreement and periodic review will ensure that the process remains on track. Mr. Chair and members, I ask for your approval of House Bill 2764. I would be happy to respond to questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carter. Are there any questions?
Mr. Chair, I just want to ask, this procedure is used for both upgrading maintenance as well as the initial installation. No.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Taylor, yes, many times a signal may be upgraded from just flashing lights to gates with flashing lights or other types of upgrading new installations.
Sure.
Yes.
Taylor, are you done?
Yes.
Representative Wells?
What was the original reason for, was it just to keep a closer accounting, or why were we paying just as we progressed along on the actual expenses rather than estimating kind of the cost and handing the money out? Why was it originally set up that way? Was it just because we were that close accounting of the money, or what was the motive to have the current law like it is?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wells, I'm not too sure about that. The Great Crossing Protection Account was created in 1973 and statutory mechanism set up, and it has been amended in different ways since then. I think this idea of a lump sum is something that has evolved with the railroads determining that too much paperwork was involved and too much capturing of indirect costs and accounting. We still have adequate auditing procedures and stuff. This is just an easier, simpler, clean-cut way to present a single-page statement mid-course and then a single-page statement after completion of a project. And as I mentioned, it's working in other states. Union Pacific does this in 13 states now that it operates in, and it's kind of an evolving thing. State by state is falling into line with the lump sum idea.
I guess, Mr. Chair, what we're talking about currently is progress claims, and I don't know how many progress claims on a project would be submitted, but what we're talking about, of course, is changing from progress claims to more of estimate of cost and allocating the money more in a lump sum at one time rather than going through the process of submitting many progress claims. And I don't know how many progress claims you have in a project. I suppose it depends on the size of the project.
You know, what we might do is, if we wasn't, let's go to Howell's comments. maybe that might clear up some of the things when you come back to these, if that's okay, because
mm-hmm.
I do see heads going up and down and back and forth, so. And then we can come back to the question, if that's okay. Thank you, Claudia.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Claudia Held, manager of OS Rail Division. This bill that was requested by the Oregon Railroad Association is one that we believe will actually improve how we disperse funds for highway railroad rate crossing improvement projects. As Mr. Petter indicated, we call these this idea something called a lump sum payment. We in fact believe that this is a way to improve accountability on the front end. Because while we would still allow for progress payments, what happens right now is that we actually don't have any method for, we can estimate ahead of time, but there's nothing to tie either the road authority or the railroad to that estimate. So we think this actually improves the accountability of these projects. Over time, we haven't gotten a lot more money for grade crossing projects. We still have many projects that are in need of installing signals and gates. So it's within our best interest as well as the railroads and road authorities to maximize the use of our limited funds. We hope this is a way that we can save a little bit of money. On crossing projects, even $1,000 in cost reduction adds up if you consider how little or how many projects we have. So that is the reason that we, in fact, feel comfortable with this bill. These are typically small projects. The railroad improvements average between 100 and the railroad side improvements average between 100,000 and 150,000 for gauge and life. Roadside improvements average now about the same amount of money, bringing the total to between $200,000 and $250,000. We, as I mentioned earlier, a small amount of money totaling, if you combine the state and federal funds, to about $2.2 million a year, which if you figure out, gives us about $10,000 annually. One of the things I think it does is get all of us to work together ahead of time to establish the cost of the project rather than simply estimating and hope to come out right at the end. The cost will be set out within our regulatory order as well as within the financial agreement we have with both parties. And if there is some kind of unforeseen engineering issue with either party, we can go back and change the order. We think this will improve accountability. This gives us a little more flexibility in having an option. Mr. Chair, Representative Wells, to your question, we don't really know whether it was put in there ahead of time. We actually think this improves accountability rather than decreasing it. This is silly. Oh, and I wanted to, Mr. Chair, if I may, answer something Representative Taylor asked. This would apply to upgrades. Should it going from life to gates and life, this does not apply to maintenance. Railroads are responsible for maintaining signals after they're installed.
Thank you very much. Well,
thank you. Maybe talk to me a little bit of how this improves accountability. In the past, we've had the bills submitted as the work goes along, or they're called progress claims. So at the end of that process, no one sit down and basically estimated what the total cost of the project was going to be. Was there a budget ever put together, or we just submitted the bills as we spent the money? Where now, under this process here of lump sum payments, then does that instigate then a budgeting process where you know what the total cost is going to be? Because you can allocate up to 80%, as I understand, money ahead of time, and then you have one more payment that would cover the initial, the remaining amount. Is that the way it works? So where does it instigate accountability?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wells, right now we can make an estimate, but we can't tie either the road authority or the railroad to that estimate. What this would do is actually lay out the estimate, if you will, within the order, which is something that is legally binding. And I think that's the difference. It was something that we tried to do in the past, but based on the way the law was written, our attorneys advised us that we really didn't have the ability to tie to the road. to that amount. And I don't think that there's been any serious problems in that area, but I think it does allow us, I guess, a little more accountability on the front end. It does push us a little bit to be more definite in those estimates.
Thank you. Are there any further questions?
Thank you. Just real quick. So as I'm reading the new language that's going to be put in here, where the accountability is upon the issuance of the order apportioning the cost. Is that, am I reading that correctly?
Okay. Representative Crummell, yes.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. I serve on three committees, and I have to compliment you. This is the first bill I have seen this session, and the two sessions filed that didn't have any amendments. Thank you very much. These are the only two people we've had listed on our sign-up sheet, so if there's no one else here to testify, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2764, and we have a bare quorum here, which is all we need. I hope you can all hang with us for these three bills, because Representative Hill was excused. Representative Bettman is ill. Representative Krupp said he would be here at 9:30, and I don't know who the vice chair is, so please stay with us if you can. We'll open the work session on House Bill 2764. What would be the pleasure of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move 2764 to the floor with the DUPAC recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Taylor moves House Bill 2764 to the floor with the DUPAC recommendation. Is there any discussion? Is there any opposition? In view of the short members present, would you call the roll, please? Let's call the roll.
Representative Crummell?
Aye.
Representative Wilkins?
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Representative Walker?
Aye.
Representative Welsh?
Yes.
Representative Montgomery?
Aye.
House Bill 2764 is passed to the floor of the past recommendation. Representative Taylor?
Sure.
Thank you. Representative Taylor will care that the other member is not present. He's showing excuse. Thank you very much, guys. Next bill on our list is House Bill 2203. I'll open the public hearing on House Bill 2203. Janet, would you please give us a rundown? Good morning. That bill, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. House Bill 2203 would authorize the Department of Transportation to count federal funds and certain state funds for the statutory requirements for spending a certain amount of the state highway funds for highway modernization. Modernization is a category within the Department of Transportation budget that includes improvement projects that add capacity to the highway system. The projects may be addition of lanes, straightening of alignment, widening of bridges, or improving exits. When the 1987 legislature passed a phase-in 6-cent gas tax increase and the equivalent weight mile tax increase, it placed in statute the requirement that the department spend 1/3 of the new revenue, which would be a 2-cent equivalent, exclusively to establish a state modernization program. The statute specifies that the intent of the modernization program is to accelerate improvements on the backlog of needs and to fund modernization to support economic development. The requirement remains in statute today and thus requires the department to spend the equivalent of 2 cents today, which is $54 million a year on modernization. The bill would authorize the department to use federal monies or other state highway fund money to fill the minimum requirement, enabling the department to more effectively manage federal funds which must be obligated under certain timelines. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's something to pass out later. Oh, Mr. Chair, this is just a little bit of history. The statute that was repealed when the 1987 law was passed, I just wanted you to see how complicated the formulas were. If you think we have complicated formulas now, this is the statute that was repealed in 1987. It's got the formula on the right is how the proportion of money for cities and counties were collected, and the formula on the left is the
for the benefit of the committee members, the sheet here that you have that Janet just read off of, I'm sure you're all aware, these just don't appear. Every time we hear a bill, she has to do buku tons of work, and that's what this is from. Every bill we have has one of these on it, so it just doesn't happen.
The other thing about this bill, I'm a little worried about, that's two more rows that are pre-sectioned filed with one amendment. Everything will fail. This is done. Thank you. Thank you for being here, by the way.
Chairman Montgomery, members of the committee, my name is Don Amon, and I'm the Funds and Grants Manager for the Department of Transportation. And I'm here to testify on House Bill 2203. What this bill does for us is it revises the statutory requirement of the Save My program to ensure that the department can use all the available federal funds that it has coming to it. In 1987, ORS 366507 established what really now has become a legal minimum for the state MOD program. That now equates to 4 cents, and the state share that is $54 million a year.
Mr. Chairman, I interrupt with a question about that. Mr. Amon, I saw that the state's share of 4 cents, and in our staff summary, it referred to 1/3 or 2 cents of that 87 gas tax. Is it indeed 2 or 4?
Well, there was two bills. In 85, there was a bill that established 2 cents, and in 87, there was another 2 cents. So the total for the two bills was 4 cents.
Thank you.
But to establish the 4 cents, which is equates to the state share of $54 million a year, currently this can only be met, this minimum level can be met using state funds. The reason we're asking for the change is to ensure that we get the full use of our federal funds that become available to us. The federal program is what we call a reimbursement program. We don't get any money up front. We actually have to expend dollars, bill the federal government, and to receive the actual federal funds that come to the state. What we do get is what we call an obligation authority, which is a maximum commitment of funds we can do in a given year. We use the term obligate, which means that the work is actually authorized. We begin work, we will then pay out money to a contractor and get reimbursed. So the quicker we can commit the funds, get the work done, and then bill the federal government, the quicker we get the money coming into ODA. I used the example of a Visa card to kind of explain how the federal program works. Every time we are ready to do a project, it's kind of like running your Visa card through the machine. And let's just use an example that the federal government said our credit limit was $250. If we had a $200 million project, we would run the credit card through the machine, which would actually then take money down from our limit. But we wouldn't get any money back until we actually went out and did some work, paid for that work, and then turned around and billed the federal government for their share. If the project was only $150 as opposed to $200, then that's all that would go against our limit. It's important that we use our full limit every year because we can only bill them for whatever we run through the machine. Mm-hmm. Another example using the Visa, ODOT actually would qualify for a higher limit on the Visa, let's say $300. But the federal government establishes our actual limit of what we can actually run through the machine at a lower level. So if we qualify for $300 and they set our limit at $250, there's a little nuance to the thing that says if we did our full limit, if we ran enough projects through the system that said you use your full available limit, we actually then can qualify for additional limit at the end of the year. And that's our goal within the department. And so if we do and our limit goes up, then we can actually do more projects at the end of the year. So what we're saying is this language change would allow ODOT then to count the federal funds towards the modernization target. It would also allow us to obligate our federal dollars more quickly and ensure that we can qualify to get more federal dollars if they become available. It would also allow us to concentrate our state dollars on programs that don't qualify for federal money or where it is less efficient to use federal dollars on some of our programs. An example might be in the maintenance program because most of the maintenance activities are not eligible for federal monies, and so we need our state dollars in to put on our maintenance program. So in summary, the bill would allow ODOT the flexibility to use federal gas tax revenues to meet the intent of ORS 266507, enable us to manage our funds effectively. What it does not do is it does not change the amount of funds that need to be spent on MOD based on the original bill.
Yes, Representative Wells.
Thank you. It's interesting that if we spend our credit, our obligation authority that we can then evidently qualify for additional federal money. Is that, why is that? Because there might be an extra little pot left over and the first people that are there can get it? Or
It's only authority. We actually get, it's like a credit limit, and we actually have a larger limit. And if other states do not use their authority, then they share that with other states who actually have reached their full limit. It's not additional money, but it allows us to get the money that we have actually that's on the books. It's kind of like a checkbook balance, but we can't get to it.
So, Mr. Chair, evidently the motive is to he who gets there first has a better chance of getting more money.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bell, that's true. The goal is that you to use all your federal money so you can actually qualify for more.
Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? I guess, have you studied this formula at all?
I believe in my name.
Serious. Why would they have 2/14 instead of 5/7 and why 2/12 instead of 1/6? Is there any logic there? I'm not going to put you on the spot.
I haven't studied that. We definitely have our person that's a revenue for us.
If there's no further discussion, we'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2203. And momentarily, we will open the work session on 2203. Representative Loken, I just have a note here that Representative Layton was delayed in Coos Bay. I didn't say why, so we have the fair report here. Is there going to join us just for a moment? Thank you. Yes. We're both going to work session for a moment, and appreciate you coming back.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, excuse me. I'd like to ask a question of the witness.
Oh, Don, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, too. Mr. Chairman, I was wondering if some concern about the about not spending enough on modernization, and there's even a bill to repeal this limit on the amount of consent on modernization, so there's kind of both feelings, spend more on modernization and spend more on maintenance. How will this bill affect that debate?
Mr. Chairman, again, this would not affect the amount of money spent on modernization. It just allows us to count what we can count towards the intent of the 366-507. So if this bill didn't happen, whatever limits were set on modernization, we would still meet that goal. If the level of modernization went up, it just means that we could count more of our federal dollars towards that goal. It would probably make it more difficult utilizing our federal dollars if the limit went up somewhere this city.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Don. Thanks for coming back. Appreciate it. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2203, and we'll open the work session on House Bill 2203. What's the pleasure of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move 2203 to the floor of the House.
Representative Wells is House Bill 2203 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? With the clerk call the roll, please.
Aye.
Aye.
Representative
Walker?
Aye.
Representative Wells?
Yes.
Representative Markham? Aye. House Bill 2203 is passed before the due pass recommendation. Representative Walker, would you pass the
okay.
Thank you very much. Next bill on our list is House Bill 3530. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 3530. Danish, could you bring something up to us? By the way, this bill, it may be a little offensive to talk about, but it's much more offensive to have to pick this stuff up along the freeway, so please bear with us as we dance around some of the language of the bill.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 3530 would create a new offense of improperly disposing of a hazardous substance if the holder of a commercial driver's license disposes of a container of urine or other hazardous substances on or beside a highway. It would make the offense a misdemeanor punishable by a maximum fine of $2,500. It would also require a one-year suspension of the person's commercial driver license upon conviction of the offense. It would entitle the person to administrative review of the suspension. Mr. Chair, at your place is also a 3530-1 amendment And I believe there's a hand in growth.
Yes, there is.
Okay. And just that would change the offense to apply to any person, not just a holder of a commercial driver's license. And also, Mr. Chair, there may need to be an additional change to another line in the bill, and I think when the Department of Transportation comes up, they can speak to that.
Okay, thank you. We do have two members of Department of Transportation with us today, Doug Pendle and another gentleman that had to drive down the gorge yesterday. Good morning, Eric.
Pretty bright. Chair Montgomery, members of the committee, good morning. I'm Doug Pendle, maintenance engineer with the Department of Transportation. With me today is Andy Anderson, area maintenance manager from Morrill, who indeed did drive down to talk to you about this bill. It's a problem for ODOT, quite frankly, to find bottles filled with urine along freeways and highways, and Andy's going to describe to you the severity of the problem. Apparently, the existing laws prohibiting littering are not, in common courtesy, are not enough to stop this from happening. And so this bill proposes to stiffen the penalty substantially for performing this disposal along roadsides. And with that, I'll turn it over to Andy, and Andy can take you through the handout.
Morning, and thanks for coming down. I appreciate it.
Morning. Representing Montgomery, representation. This presentation that I've handed out to you is one that I've given in last year at a session that we had in the valve, and it was just the presentation was put together to bring awareness to the problem that we are having and to give you some hypothetical cost estimates as to what ODOT is occurring and could possibly occur in the future as this, as the industry catches up with the new laws and the disposal and how we have to, what we can do as far as the waste thing. What I'd like to talk about, and I've also included several photographs, all those that you see there are bottles that have been picked up by ODOT employees, and we took account of that particular time. The health urine bucket advisory that was put out by our hygienist is attached to the back. And
yeah, are you going through these slides one at a time?
Correct.
Is the third slide yet?
Third slide is just increasing cost and problem, and I'll get to the cost with the next
one with the pictures here. My question is, this is not on the freeway, so it's all of our roads in Oregon, not just the freeways. This looks like it's down around your country someplace.
Actually, I do have a section of freeway from the John Day River to Utah Road, but the majority of it is freight routes that we have an effort or these bottles are being picked up. We're even noticing it even on some of our secondary highways. I was talking with the roadmaster from Gillum County, and they are starting to notice these things even as far out as Condon, where we don't have a lot of traffic. The advisory that was put out by our hygienist with the state identifies three possible ways, scenarios for us to dispose of this, and keeping in mind that this is just an advisory at this time. But what they're asking or what we should be doing, not only is the safety equipment for our employees is picking this up, we do not have any of our youth litter patrol handling this substance, so it's an item that ODOT employees have to go out and actually sort and keep separated so that we can dispose of it. A couple of things that they're looking at us doing is testing it, which I brought a sample from Tim's test strips is what we're being asked to do to test this to identify it as urine. And once we know what the product is, then we can dispose of it through normal channels.
Let me ask you a question. I mean, our state employees have to open some of these ugly bottles and stick one of those strip things in them?
That is the recommendation, or that is what the advisor is saying. Because until we know what the product is that we're picking up, it's an unknown. It would be considered a hazardous material. So the disposal of that is actually more than the urine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What do you do presently, then, if you are not currently using these picks? How do you identify it, or what do you do with a bottle that you pick up you don't know what's in it?
presently, what we are doing is, like I said, we have, it is being sorted. We are separating out these containers, and in our location, the regular landfill people that come and pick up the bags that we have a contract with and paying for, they are, so that they aren't being crushed in their trucks or put somewhere, they are hand carrying them and putting them in separate boxes and hand carrying them to the landfills and disposing them. I talked with our carrier just when I got the notice that I was going to come down here, and he has found out since this last year that he is not going to be able to do that anymore, because even to dispose of it in the landfill is going to be not recommended. And he was going to confer with the disposal site at Arlington, where he would have to take this stuff and separate it to the, because it is a biohazard, and dispose of it separately. When I asked him what the cost was going to be for him to do that, he was, at that time, he had, didn't know what that cost was going to be.
Well, but you say these substances, so when you find a bottle, that looks suspicious, you just set that aside. You don't, at that point, there's no testing under current law then. It's just a bottle and put it aside.
Yes, that is correct. What we do is we do, it is an advisory. It's mostly for the health of our own employees and their protection. And we don't want any of the youth dealing with these substances as well as any other hazardous material that they find on the road.
Yes, Representative Walton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm confused. Why couldn't, when you pick this up, why can't you just dump it down the sewer once you determine it's urine?
You can if once it is determined that it is urine.
Okay.
The way it's determined that it is urine is to
do the dipstick thing.
The test or have it tested.
Can you get someone's DNA off their urine so you can go after these people?
I don't know.
It's probably pretty expensive.
Thank you. Nice to see you again. I was up at the Dalles or wherever we were that day and saw some of your son's teeth in the back of your pickup there. Looking at in this material you handed out here on page 2, it says that the bottle is urine and not hazardous waste. Evidently, urine is not considered hazardous waste, yet in the bill, you have a person commits offense and improperly disposing of a hazardous substance. So are we going to have a problem with that kind of language? Now, I see farther down on line 9, you did eliminate other hazardous substance, you call it other human waste, but the offense of disposing of a hazardous substance, yet evidently urine, once it's identified, is not considered a hazardous substance.
Chair Montgomery, Representative Wells, that's correct. The bill is drafted, actually puts us into somewhat of a conflict with some federal rules regarding hazardous substances, and I think as Ms. Adkins alluded to, that we probably need to change that word hazardous substance to human waste in both spots on the bill.
Yeah, pardon me, is that a recommendation then?
Chair Montgomery, yes, that's coming up. That's a recommendation.
Cindy, pardon the interruption, please go ahead.
If you would take a look, I just put together a hypothetical cost for this comment to save some paddle. What is the size and cost of the problem? Just to run down through that, Oregon has 8,177 miles of road, 4,387 miles are interstate or NHS, which are the freight routes. Based on a count during spring break of 97 at four different locations, we averaged 4.5 bottles per mile in a two-week period. Estimating that as far as man hours, it takes 0.3 man hours to pick up a bottle, test it, and dispose of it, it would cost approximately $7 per bottle if testing was positive for urine. The unidentified bottles that are considered to be a hazardous material because of it, we wouldn't know what was it. If they were at 10%, right now, California is looking at paying $29 a bottle. They just assume that it is, and that's what they're paying to have it disposed of down in California at this time. So if you took all that and we only did it twice a year, we'd be looking at $275,000 just to pick up and test this type of pick up and test the urine bottles. If 10% of that was hazard, at $29 a bottle, you'd be looking at another $114,000 for a total of around $390,000. Just to put this in perspective, my maintenance material budget for purchasing asphalt and paving for three crews is approximately this same amount.
At this point, it's still illegal to throw a bottle out. That's called, you know, something else. We're not talking about that kind of bottle.
And the urine bottles is probably, it's identifiable, but there are also other surprises that we are, which I don't really want to go into, that we're getting out there. It makes it very unpleasant for our workers. What the department is doing, the last sheet is, we have newsletters and articles in the trucking industry publications about this topic. All of the truck stops are having the same problems and will support corrective action. ODOT is working with the health department to warn of the hazards and educate the public on this topic. Very few people really understand what a lot of those topics are out there.
Mm-hmm.
And to conclude, what I'd like to say is this morning, on my way here, I thought I'd just get paid a count. Well, by the time I hit the dowels and went to Portland here, I counted 28 bottles. It was interesting to me that I never seen, all I seen was two from Portland to Salem on freeway system, I-5 and 205, which was interesting. This spring break, although we didn't do an actual count of bottles, on the freeway section, it was estimated in the neighborhood 500 bottles were picked up, and on Highway 97, or Route 97, we had 19 litter pickers working, and we picked up around 275.
These are just the ones you see. You don't see the ones over the bank driving. Pardon me. Before I go to Representative Logan, and we're obviously looking too hard at the trucking industry. I'm sure that they are by no means the only guilty parties in this. By no means, period. Representative Logan?
A question. There seems to be pretty offensive things to do, but I'm wondering how you can catch them. Bottle sitting there, but how do you know who did it? From seeing that someone do this?
I personally have seen it. Chairman, I have personally seen this happen, having spent quite a bit of time on the road.
Mm-hmm.
You can see them setting it out.
So you feel that there would be an opportunity then for adequate enforcement, or at least enough that it could send a message?
Chairman Montgomery, Representative Loken, I would hope that passage of this bill would send the message of the concern about this issue, and that it probably wouldn't take a lot of cases to get before the word would get out that this is something that Oregon is not going to accept.
If it is seen by our state police also, or the county police, different people, truck and city cars, and all they can do is write them up with the limit. So that's take a look. Are there further questions in the committee?
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
sir. The bill says if they throw, put, or otherwise leave a container on or beside the highway, does that include the highway rest area trash can?
Chair Montgomery, Representative Taylor, I don't believe that those trash cans are considered, would be considered in this bill for that disposal. I think it's actually on the if they left it on the curb in the rest area, it probably would, but in a trash can, it probably is proper disposal. It's similar to what litter would be.
If I might follow up, Mr. Chair. And does that happen? Do they leave them on the curb in the truck areas of the rest area, or is it less of a problem there? They're left there?
Chairman, they are left there, and some of the key areas are any, like, brick test areas or any of the widening on the roads. You get a collection. Interchanges are real popular where they do pull over.
Mr. Chair, it almost seems like we need what we have for motorhome disposal sites, you know, drive-by disposal sites, and for the industry to have some kind of containers, you know. I'd like to just point out for the record, this is a guy problem.
Yes, thank you. To get back to my other issue here, down, of course, on line 9, we're still talking probably disposing of hazardous substance. What is this law going to be called if you take out the word hazardous substance?
Chair Montgomery, Representative Wells, our recommendation is human waste.
There, and also Representative Wells, on page, on the back of page 8, but the second page there, line 45, it says hazardous substance at the bottom there.
Mm-hmm.
I think we need to change that wording too, don't we, Beth? That wording should be changed to human waste, is that the phrase?
Yes.
Any other discussion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are a good share of the numbers that you, of the bottles that you do test, do they turn out to be urine, or are they actually leftover pee, or it seems like quite a few of them might be something that another motorist passed out that's just a half a bottle of unfinished pee. I mean, whatever was in the bottle.
Chairman, like I said, we are not at the point that we have been doing a lot of testing at this point, but from my other senses, I would say that the majority of these bottles are urine.
Thank you, Jen. Another question?
Mr. Chair, because this does would affect, as the bill's written, a person's commercial driver's license, and those are under a federal requirement to have a commercial driver's license. There's a little bit of concern that an out-of-state person might not know or even advertise well in the state, but I did check with Kelly Taylor at the DMV, and states can add additional retirement requirements on the commercial driver's license because that was a concern of mine. Thank you.
Thank you. Other discussions of the committee?
Mr. Chair, this is a problem in Oregon that I did not know exists, and I wish I had never learned about it, actually, but I think it's depressing, and I think it your observation about it, requiring our state employees and our volunteers to deal with these kinds of problems is we really do need to find a way.
It came to us in a meeting that Representative Wells and I and Representative Wilson, I believe you were there in the Dalles, and they got to pick up the final thing with sun tea. Most people didn't know what it was. Janet didn't have the foggiest idea, and he opened that back pickup, and they still didn't know what they were looking at. And, you know, our public employees take a beating more than they ever should, and this is one example of something that we shouldn't tolerate, and I really appreciate them bringing it to us. We don't want to single out the trucking industry at all, when it was first written up, the word commercial driver's license was in there. The first thing that person did was go to the trucking industry and tell them that it was taken out immediately, because it's not only them by any means. So any other discussion? Thank you very much for coming down. We appreciate you bringing it to our attention. I don't really appreciate it, but thank you for coming down and bringing it to our attention.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Wells.
I might point out we've, of course, been picking out offensive material for years. I spent time in the Army doing picking up cigarette butts, and I still see cigarette smokers will sit and just flip one out in the parking lot in front of stores, and somebody has to come along and pick those up. So we have a certain people out there in our population that evidently have no qualms about throwing offensive material out on public property.
Mr. Chair, Representative Volk and I were talking about the problem also with disposable diapers, the places where they're being disposed of and going to landfills for the most part. It was just not an appropriate place for the disposal of human waste. So if there's any way that we can include that, that would also be an advantage, I would think.
I would rather shy away from that if I could, then that could be a separate issue. There was a good representative from Eugene many years ago, and that was sort of one thing, but the Mary Burroughs, I don't know if any of you know, very nice lady.
Mm-hmm.
And she kept trying to
get that through, and for some reason it stopped. And I'd make it a separate issue, and I'll be happy to stand right beside you. We'll ready for work session, Representative Coleman?
I would just make one notation. When Representative Taylor mentioned about dump sites, we do have dump sites. For this is called the rest stop. It's called get out of your car and go in and use the facility.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, are we going to have another amendment, or are we just going to?
I think we can have conceptual amendment right here since it's such a small one. If it's okay with the committee and get this moving forward, if that would close the public hearing in the work session in House Bill 3530, you all have a copy of the hand and go amendments that were prepared by Brad and Janet. I think on line number 9 on page 1 and line number 45 on page 2, and any other place that happens to say hazardous substance, line 6, we're changing that phrase, Janet, to human waste, is that correct?
Yeah.
And that would be the best item for the ODOT people, that's understandable at all. Does the committee understand those? Mm-hmm. Three changes from the hand and growth.
Mm-hmm.
Any other discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Wells?
Oh, I think Representative is ready to move the bill. I'll let him.
I move the dash, I guess they would be the dash one amendment, or conceptual dash one amendment to House Bill 3530.
Mr. Thomas moves the dash one amendment as conceptual amendment. Okay, House Bill 3530, is there any discussion, any opposition? Hearing none, Representative Collins?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3530 to the floor, as amended, to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Collins moves House Bill 3530 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. With any discussion, with the clerk call the roll?
Representative Collins?
Aye.
Representative Wilson?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Yes. Aye. House Bill 3530 is passed and the floor is amended and conceptual amended with a due process recommendation. Let the chair, if Representative Coleman, if not.
Well, if you would like me to, I would. But if you'd like to carry it, because
no, I suppose you and Representative Lee are going to carry it. So who's going to carry it?
Okay,
you got Representative Coleman carrying the bill.
I'm going to talk about urine on the floor.
Thank you all very much. Thank you, Andy, for coming down this morning. We appreciate it. For the benefit of the committee members, we're going to try to get together, Janet and I and Mike Lehman, this afternoon, list all the bills we have. You never know whether they're going to be controversial or not, you know, and this is nice. My gosh, it's 9:30 right here.
Really?
And we'll not try to load us up, but we'll try to do all of our colleagues' service and hear bills that have 6 votes on the committee. And it doesn't matter who it is, if they have 6 votes, we'll work on them. And having said that, thank you very much. We are adjourned.
Thank you.